My name is Jean McMillan. Today is October 15th. I'm interviewing Foster McMillan at 41 Chatfield Hill Drive. Foster, where were you born and when?
I was born on Staten Island, New York, on May 31st, 1911.
What were the names of your parents and their birthplaces?
My father was Harlow McMillan, born in Seneca Falls, New York, in 1862. My mother, Elizabeth Morton Boyce, was born in New York City on the 4th of July in 1870.
Thank you. Foster, can you give us some early recollections of Sharon Hospital?
In the Sharon Hospital, when I first knew it in the 1950s, was much smaller than it is now. It was a Sunday morning, and as far as I could see, there was no one there in the ER department. I don't think they even had a reception desk. Dr. Brewer was on duty, and he appeared to be the only staff around. He gave me the shot, and that was my first encounter with the Sharon Hospital.
Can you tell us what it was like when you went to work at Sharon Hospital?
I had several jobs. I distributed the mail. I ran the duplicating machine in the basement. I escorted the one-day stay people around to the various departments where they would be when they came in for treatment. And perhaps most of all, I ran or monitored or followed the tumor registry with Joan McHugh up on the top floor. That was a very interesting job, which I held until the loss of my first wife to cancer at the hospital, and then I stopped all volunteer work at the hospital. I could not continue.
Now that you've talked a little bit about Sharon Hospital, could you tell us something about the Railroad Association to which you've belonged?
Founded in the 70s, it was dedicated to the preservation of Railroadiana, particularly the CNE Union Station in Canaan. It had played a major role in the railroad days that were held in Canaan. Under the guidance of Truman Crowell and Earl Smedic, the association grew until over the years the membership dwindled as the active members grew older. The railroad collected railroad artifacts, the main one being a 1918 wooden caboose purchased from New York Central Railroad. It was sold for $1 to Danbury Railroad Historical Danbury Railroad Historical Club. In addition, there was a tricycle handcar and another handcar, which both had been stolen from the station. There was also a huge oil locomotive headlamp, which is still around, unless lost in the Cana Depot fire, in which also resulted losses of artifacts which were on display in the second floor office. The association held regular monthly meetings and an annual banquet, but these dwindled, and the last banquet was held at the Depot Restaurant about 2000. After that, an annual membership meeting kept the association legally alive. It had been legally organized under the Connecticut State Department. I became the last regularly elected officer, and as president was able to sign the legal papers transferring ownership of the station from the private owner to the Railroad Association, which as a nonprofit organization could solicit funds for its restoration. The Connecticut Railroad Historical Association still exists as the owner of the Canaan Union Station. The present owners, all duly elected officers, are in charge of the effort to rebuild and restore that building. Various artifacts have been located and will be put on display in the proposed museum to be located in the old waiting room and ticket office area.
Now, would you like to talk about a relative that came into the area, your sister, Olive Sally McMillan?
Henry Kiera came to St. John's Church as an interim pastor in 1925. In 1926, he was appointed permanent. Among his parishioners was Mrs. Haviland and her daughter's family, Alex Daly. Mrs. Haviland lived in Taconic Road opposite the Whitridges. Sally and Dorothy, otherwise known as Doppy, Dooley Daly had been friends since high school, even though Sally went to Elmira College and Dorothy to Cornell University. Sally was visiting the Dalys in the summer of 1929 or 30 and attended St. John's. She was informed that the pastor, Henry Kiera, was unmarried and considered a catch. She is reported to have said, "Wait till I get him." In the event, they were engaged, and when my beloved sister Sally informed us that she was engaged to Enrico Giuseppe Kiera, I went through the roof, so to speak. The wedding ceremony was hilarious. In a way, Henry's brother George, also an Episcopal minister, conducted the ceremony, which took place in a small church in New York City. It was planned to have it in a chapel, quietly, but so many of Henry's friends and parishioners from Salisbury showed up that it was at the last minute transferred to the main church to accommodate all the visitors. It became very formal. My father was to escort Sally down the aisle to the altar. Unrehearsed, George Kiera started the ceremony when Henry, at one side, realizing the error, sprang forward with a hist to stop George, and realizing he was in front of the congregation, looked aghast and stepped back. Silence prevailed. Nothing happened. George trying to stifle his mirth, Henry apprehensive, and Sally and her father just standing in the rear. Finally, my Aunt Marie McDonald, sitting in the front row, turned around and with a full arm swing, beckoned my father and Sally to come down the aisle. They did. We're married. And then all repaired to the church parlor for a refection. I added, to the gravity of the association, or shall I say the gaiety, by demanding a second helping of the creamed chicken and pastry shells, and being refused, I loudly announced, "My father is paying for this. I don't know if he was. Then I observed Sally, Aunt Marie, and my mother in a huddle off to the side. I strolled over to butt in and was instantly dismissed. I learned later that they were, mother and aunt, were instructed Sally in the facts of life. Actually, their first child, Lisa, was born 9 months later to the day. Sally was a small woman, and her pregnancy became quite evident, so much so that local gossip was concerned who would get there first, the stork or the doctor. The following summer, 1931, I came up to Salisbury to get to know my brother-in-law. There began a lifelong friendship. That visit was also my first to Salisbury, and I fell quite in love with the area, so much so that from that time, every weekend of vacation was spent visiting Sally and Henry at the vicarage. Henry passed away in 1952 at the age of 64, holding the title of Pastor Emeritus. I continued visiting Sally at every opportunity after Henry's death. At that time, she taught at Indian Mountain School, and then entered the public school system, where she taught at Cornwall School until her medical retirement in 1972. I might say that knowing Henry Carrier was an experience. A characteristic he had was fast driving, so much so that his local nickname was the Flying Jesus. His parish visits were frequent, and I remember well visiting the Robert Scovilles. Elvia, their daughter, was home, and on being asked her plans for the summer, said she was going to Europe with her LaSalle auto. This was in 1932, and I was working when I could find employment for as little as 8 cents an hour. How well I recall a visit to the rectory on a weekend when Henry burst out of his study with the news that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. I need not give the date.